From KALW News in San Francisco, get ready for a look at a unique San Francisco tradition.
In San Francisco, the Chinese New Year's celebration has some pleasant sidelights. One of the pleasantest is choosing the new Miss Chinatown USA. Chinese-American beauties from many states compete for this nationwide honor.
Today, we're diving deep into the world of the Miss Chinatown USA pageant.
Tonight, I'm here to humbly express my gratitude to my ancestors who came before me, because I am their new generation of beauty.
We're asking, what does the pageant mean for San Franciscans today, and who is it for?
I don't wear fake lashes every day. I don't, you know, wave consistently when I'm walking down the street. I don't greet every single person like, hi, how are you? Welcome.
The making of a Chinese-American beauty queen. Stay tuned for the debut of the original documentary from KALW News. Beauty pageants have been in the news recently. You might have heard the Miss America pageant got rid of the swimsuit competition this year. And next month, the Miss America 2.0 pageant is set to air. It's not the first time the pageant has had to adapt to changing world views. It used to be that the pageant was beholden to what they called Rule Number 7, which stated, quote, contestants must be of good health and the white race. That rule lasted to the 1940s, but it took an initial 40-something years for a person of color competing in the pageant to be actually crowned. Meanwhile, quote-unquote ethnic pageants were created to make a space for aspiring beauty queens often excluded from mainstream pageants. One of them was the Miss Chinatown USA pageant, held right here in San Francisco. When it first started as a national event back in 1958, it sold out huge theaters to eager crowds of Chinese Americans who wanted to see an ambassador of their community wearing the crown. But what does it mean now, in the year 2018? KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma went to find out.
The first time I met Jasmine Lee, she came bounding out of an elevator, apologizing profusely for being a couple minutes late.
I was up between 3 and 4:30, just triaging a broken online system.
Jasmine is a 24-year-old software engineer. Her office is in the middle of San Francisco's downtown, among some of the giants of the tech world, Twitter and Uber and Square. She takes me into a room full of free snacks so that we can conspiratorially stuff our pockets with cashews and coconut water, the good expensive stuff. Like a lot of people working in tech here in the Bay Area, she stays late and comes home to her apartment in the Mission near the bustle of the BART station. But on a handful of nights, in the quiet of the women's bathroom, she transforms into someone else entirely.
Just like Friday, actually, I had an appearance to go to after work, and so I lugged all my stuff with me to work. And after I got on my meeting, I started changing the bathroom, and I came out, I was in my chi pao, I was on like full hair and makeup. And so this, you know, one of the managers on a team was like, Jasmine, like, where are you off to? Why are you dressed like that? And I said, oh, I'm now off to see my people.
By day, Jasmine's writing code. By night, she's fulfilling her duties as the crowned winner of the Miss Chinatown USA pageant. The pageant's been a national event since the late 50s.
In San Francisco, the Chinese New Year's celebration has some pleasant sidelights. One of the pleasantest is choosing the new Miss Chinatown USA.
This is news footage from 1960. In it, women promenade on stage for the benefit of the judges and audience, in silk cheongsam or chi pao, a traditional Chinese dress, plus long white gloves and a whole mess of hairspray. In 2018, the cheongsam are sequined and sparkle in the light, and the women have swapped their bouffants for beachy waves, like the ones you see on The Bachelor. But the core message of the pageant remains the same, a dizzying celebration of both pure Americana and the contestants' Chinese heritage.
Tonight, I'm here to humbly express my gratitude to my ancestors who came before me, because I am their new generation of beauty.
How it works is this. Women participate in local beauty pageants in Chinatowns across the country, and the qualifiers come to San Francisco for the main title. This pageant hit the national stage in the thick of the Cold War, and just a little more than a decade after America had forcibly incarcerated thousands of Japanese Americans during World War II. It was a time when Chinese Americans still wanted to prove that their foreignness didn't pose a threat to mainstream America. The Miss Chinatown pageant, which was modeled on the Miss America pageant, was a way for the Chinese community to perform their Americanness and model a form of assimilation for the hundreds of people watching by showing what an idealized version of Chinese American femininity should look like. The winner would become a celebrated ambassador for the Chinese American community, visiting family associations and benevolent societies, attending banquets and social functions, promoting businesses, and maybe most visibly, marching in the city's famous Lunar New Year parade. Years later, people from the neighborhood would remember what color dress Miss Chinatown wore to the festival, and what it felt like to be part of the throng, looking up at the queen riding on top of a slow-moving car, in the middle of the exploding firecrackers and the lion dancers and the little kids kicking their feet out in unison. This year was the first Miss Chinatown pageant I'd ever attended. I got to watch Jasmine clinch the title. She was one of 14 contestants, all of whom had to be unmarried, with no kids, and having secured a sponsor who could cover the $2,000 entry fee. And each one was in it for different reasons.
My immigrant experience taught me to be adventurous and resilient. I'm a Chinese adoptee, born in Jiangxi, China, and adopted by my American family in Maryland. Although I grew up without my Chinese roots, I have always loved to study Chinese. I'm here today to show my pride in my Chinese heritage and because I am a new generation of beauty.
Sitting high up in the balcony of the Grand Herbst Theater, I couldn't deny feeling a little uneasy. Maybe it was just because the world of beauty pageants was so new to me. The highly choreographed glitz and glamour of it, the swimsuits and the sexy dance numbers. But it wasn't just the sheer novelty of the experience that was making me feel uncomfortable. Maybe this is the part where I explain a little about myself and why I was interested in the pageant in the first place. I don't exactly fit the stereotypical mold of a beauty queen. I'm a clog-wearing public radio reporter with a casual approach to brushing my own hair. But Jasmine and I have a couple things in common. We both grew up here in San Francisco. We're actually from the same neighborhood, the Outer Richmond, considered by some a satellite Chinatown. It's full of dim sum parlors and Asian grocery stores and a robust Chinese population. And like Jasmine, I identify as Chinese American, although with some few important qualifiers. My grandparents immigrated to America from China in the wake of World War II. But I'm also half white. I wouldn't actually be allowed into this pageant because it's strictly patrilineal, and my dad's parents fled Germany and Poland to come here. So that's all the stuff I was bringing with me as I watched the pageant unspool. And there were times I felt like I was witnessing the weirdest parts of being a woman interplay with the weirdest parts of being a model minority. And by that I mean the expectation to be diligent and demure and hardworking, to never rock the boat, to put everyone at ease, and to always be smiling.
So tonight, I'm here to show the world what being Chinese American means to me. Fiercely competitive and
But then I met Jasmine and her family, and they changed the way I felt about the pageant completely.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jasmine Lee. I'm 24 years old, and I was born and raised here in San Francisco. I'm here today to fulfill my childhood dream of becoming Miss Chinatown because she represents the Chinese American community and because I'm a new generation of beauty.
Jasmine's dad grew up here in San Francisco, and the various beauty queens he saw every year at the Chinese New Year Parade, they made a big impression on him as a kid.
I always thought it was possible for someone to be Miss Chinatown, unless you're unusually gifted, you know?
Yeah, like it's like to be able to win it out of everybody, it's like
yes,
a really
yes.
Big,
oh, yes, yes, yes.
Well, so what's it like now to have two daughters who've both won it?
Oh, what's it like? Very rare, yeah. Sort of incredible.
You heard right. Jasmine is the second in her family to secure the title. Before her came her sister Crystal, who was 3 years older, and was Miss Chinatown in 2010. Crystal, who went on to make pageant history.
Who will be Miss America? Is it Miss California? Or Is it back-to-back Miss New Yorks?
I mean, we're both so proud. We're making history right here, standing here as Asian Americans, so we're really proud.
And you should be. Congratulations.
What you're hearing is the sound of Crystal almost becoming the country's first Chinese American Miss America back in 2014. She got pretty darn close. And the woman she lost to, Miss New York, she was also Asian, Indian American. As you can imagine, the internet noticed.
Online and in Twitter, on Twitter, there were some mean comments just like, wow, I can't believe the top two, one of which, should have run a quickie mart, and the other one was like a North Korean refugee. They thought I was North Korean. I just have to be like a lily pad and let it roll right off.
One thing you need to know about Crystal is that she's tough. At a young age, she figured out a way to toggle between ethnic and more mainstream pageants pretty seamlessly.
When I was a teen, I competed in Miss America's Outstanding Teen, which was in Florida, and that was my first real experience with understanding that the rest of the United States is not like the San Francisco Bay Area. In fact, we grew up in a very Chinese neighborhood where my middle school was mostly Chinese people, so I was like in this bubble of Chinese Americans. When I went to Florida when I was 16, I had this woman who came up to me. She was from the South. She comes up real close and says, oh, aren't you just the most darling Oriental girl? You're just so darling. Like, you know, and at the time I was thinking Oriental, like I'm not like you mean like a rug, a lamp? Oh, like a ramen flavor. I wasn't personally offended, but it was a moment where I realized, okay, like I'm definitely different and people know me as that one Chinese girl.
Crystal explained to me that there are different cultural expectations for the different pageants. Like in the mainstream pageants, they want you to be super tan. In the Chinese pageants, they prefer if you're really pale. In mainstream pageants, they want you to be brash and political. Maybe the question you get is whether or not the use of chemical weapons in Syria should call for U.S. intervention. In the Miss Chinatown USA pageant, you're not really supposed to be super outspoken. The questions are more general, like what does inner beauty mean to you?
We have to like switch personas, like we switch outerwear. Like, oh, I'm going to wear this down jacket one day. Okay, I'm going to wear this peacoat one day. And it's very much the same thing.
This disorienting back and forth, making yourself look different, sound different, act different for a body of judges evaluating you based on their criteria. It's a pretty good metaphor for the kind of code switching many Americans with immigrant backgrounds have to do, whether or not they're beauty queens. And Crystal's pretty shrewd about it. Through pageants, she won scholarship money that helped fund her tuition at Stanford. And the pageants opened doors for her. Right now, she's hosting a TV show called This is San Francisco. For her, it's tactical.
I was really careful not to be like that one ethnic girl who was like constantly pushing some sort of cultural agenda, because that's something that I don't think a lot of people can relate to.
When I met Crystal, I was instantly taken by her. She's enigmatic, she's really funny, and she's unapologetic about her ambition, what she wants out of the world. But some of the things she said about being a person of color in the whitewashed world of beauty pageants, they took me aback, like this.
You can't blame American pageants for celebrating whiteness, because those are the people who first came over and like on the Mayflower. Like they were the ones, they're the incumbent culture creators. And I did come here after them, and my family came here after them. So in a sense, I totally get where they're coming from. And I'm not like, the onus is on me to assimilate. The onus isn't on me to preach to them to make this a better place for me now, if that makes sense. Because that's like the immigrant in me talking.
When she first said this to me, I thought it was extreme. But there's also something in here that's not totally surprising. Even in my own family story, there exists that constant pressure to assimilate. For instance, my grandparents immigrated here from China, but they didn't teach their kids any of their native language. They wanted them to be unmistakably American. They converted to Quakerism. They kept a low profile and tried as best they could to blend in with their surroundings. And this story isn't specific to my family. Assimilation has been a strategy for success for Chinese immigrants since they first arrived here in large numbers, back in the late 1800s during the gold rush, when cheap Chinese labor was used to build the railroads and work in the mines. Chinese immigrants became one of the most reviled groups in the country. politicians made their careers off of maligning them. People thought they were responsible for taking American jobs. Chinese immigrants were harassed, discriminated against, threatened with violence. They were the recipients of an early travel ban. The Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882 barred the entry of Chinese immigrants into this country for decades. That's the historical backdrop to Chinese immigrants first making this country their home. And that legacy of racism reverberates today. Crystal says that when she was a kid growing up, her mom, an immigrant from Taiwan, wanted to make sure that her kid was prepared to live in a country that might find her difference threatening. So her mom was hard on her.
I just know growing up, my mom was very stressed out too. Like, she was supporting the entire family, and, you know, my father was a small business owner. And so I know my mom had a lot of stress, but it was more an overall philosophy of, if you're going to do something, you give 120%. And if you are Chinese American, sorry to say, but no one's going to roll out the red carpet and let opportunities come and fall at your feet. You actually have to hustle for it, because someone next to you who has invisible advantages that you don't is going to give 100% already. So you have to give 120 to get the same opportunity as that person next to you with the invisible advantage. And my mom was very, I think, excellent and skilled at beating that into me when I was a kid.
Crystal said this philosophy shaped her whole worldview.
Like, I grew up kind of like, oh, the world out there is scary and everyone's going to try to screw me. So I have to go work hard to really get my way and be clever about things. And you know what I mean? It's just a classic immigrant's shield where you have to have that mental toughness.
Part of that mental toughness meant having a more complicated relationship with her mom.
My mom, like, laid out the roadmap, and our relationship was totally second. Like, there were times where I was like, oh, my mom was driving me crazy, and I wouldn't talk to her. A non-tiger. Yeah. No. But my mom, you're the evil genius. It all worked out according to plan, right?
I should mention that Crystal is saying all of this in front of her mom, Wendy, who was sitting next to us on a couch listening patiently.
But I'm saying we did not talk for, like, we were not as close as we are now. We were not friends. Whereas a lot of my Caucasian friends, like, they, you know, they're best friends with their mothers. And their mothers would never think of doing anything to risk the relationship, because it's like, oh, Tiffany's not going to talk to me. Or, you know, Jillian can't not talk to me. Right?
I love that your white girl names are Tiffany and Jillian.
Tiffany's actually a very Chinese name as well. But you get it, right? It's like, Tammy's not going to talk to me.
Like, she's not going to tell me about, like, all the boys she likes.
Exactly. Exactly. And tiger moms look at that and they're like,
we don't want that.
Like, dude, my daughter's not my friend. My job is to get her set up in life, even if it means that she hates me in the short term.
This is where Crystal's mom chimes in.
I knew that she hates me, but that's how I feel. That's my job.
Did it ever feel painful to be that strict?
Oh, of course. Of course, when I see that it's ruining our lives, you know, but temporary, and there are times I just want to run away too.
Crystal and Jasmine's mom, Wendy, is a bubbly woman who offers me tea as soon as I walk in the door. In anticipation of my visit, she's laid out her daughter's pageant memorabilia all over the living room. Their sashes and plaques and glowing headshots. It was her who really encouraged Crystal to get involved in pageants.
She didn't want me to be a swimmer because it would make my shoulders big and therefore hard to find a boyfriend. So she put me into dance. She put me into ballet. Ballet was very becoming for a young woman. That's also a negotiation of value systems, because my mom was born in Taiwan, and, you know, women back then have a very specific archetype for success. I mean, some would even call it, like, you know, being a trophy wife is comfortable and secure and stable. And so I think my mom wanted me to at least have that as a backup.
But Wendy would also be the first to say that her daughters are different and had different experiences of childhood. Crystal, the big sister, was under more scrutiny. Jasmine, the little sister, got to be a little more laid back. And so Crystal, she pushed Jasmine in the same way her mom pushed her.
I mean, my mom's a tiger mom, so, like, I'm pretty much a tiger mom in training. And so, you know, Jasmine represents me. So I wanted her to do well, because if she didn't do well, or if she looked like she was untrained, that would have been, everyone would have said, well, she's Crystal's sister. Like, why is she walking like that? Or why isn't she in better shape? Like, didn't Crystal tell her to like get to the gym? And so, although I would say Jasmine did all of the work.
I asked Jasmine, who was also sitting next to me as I spoke with Crystal, if this felt like a more extreme model of femininity to grow up with.
Yes, I think it was to grow up as a kid and in high school already have all these expectations of like what society deems beautiful, and to have to abide by that so young.
I had wondered why Jasmine might want to participate in this pageant. Jasmine, who lived in a co-op at UC Berkeley. Jasmine, whose ears jangled with the weight of silver hoops and studs. Jasmine, who cracked wry jokes about the patriarchy. She told me, the pageant doesn't mean the same thing it did 50 years ago.
Back when the pageant first started, you know, the people who were participating in it probably thought, you know, probably helped them feel more American. But today, helps me feel more Chinese.
For Jasmine, a second-generation San Franciscan and an ABC, American-born Chinese, it means a lot to become a part of Chinatown's history. She likes visiting the family associations or helping raise money for the local Chinese hospital. She likes meeting other Chinese women from all over the country. And she also knows it's just one part of her life.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I don't wear fake lashes every day. I don't, you know, wave consistently when I'm walking down the street. I don't greet every single person like, hi, how are you? Welcome. Happy Chinese New Year.
But she's careful to put forward the image that she knows the pageant wants. She tells me a story about an appearance she had to make.
The day after the pageant, the very first morning, I had an interview. And I have a ton of ear piercings that I got when I was in Berkeley, living in the co-ops. And my friend, who was helping me prepare for the interview, told me to take them off. She was like, those piercings are good for you. And, you know, it's a Jasmine thing, but it's not a Miss Chinatown thing. You have to represent us. You're no longer yourself. You're representing the organization. This is a service position. Yes, you're absolutely correct. So there's a bit of, you know, that's an example of the sort of balance that I'm struggling to find, right? Because I do think that I want to be true to myself, and questioning whether there exists a feminine ideal. But I also understand that this is a service position, right? Like, as Miss Chinatown, I'm representing the greater community, the organization, and I have to do that well, and I have to respect that. I think the stereotype for Chinese women is to be submissive, and that's something that we are still dealing with today.
At its best, the Miss Chinatown pageant is a space where Chinese American women can feel pride in their immigrant identity and network with one another to feel a sense of community in this diasporic sprawl of a country. At its worst, the pageant serves as a reedification of some of the most harmful stereotypes about Asian women, that we exist to please others and should do so at the expense of our own individuality. I wanted to walk away from this experience having a clearer opinion of which version seemed closer to the truth, whether this pageant was a good thing or a bad thing. What I landed on was that it was messy. And honestly, that felt right, because existing between two cultures is messy. Here's Crystal again.
It's sort of like the oxygen we breathe. Like, it's always been there. You can't really see it. But yeah, like, we are a Chinese American family, and everything from the slippers we're wearing to the fact that we can smell like rice cooking, right? It's just, that's just a part of our DNA. And where I see myself speaking more about it is because my boyfriend of 7 years is Caucasian. And it's really important to me that, like, if we were to have children one day, that they speak Mandarin and that they know that I am possible and they are possible because of immigrants who came over and had nerves of steel.
Do you feel like that's the value of the Miss Chinatown pageant? And you're like, this is a legacy that I'm part of. Like, it's a personal legacy, but it's also, it's bigger than me.
Yeah, absolutely. It's way bigger than me. And there have been Miss Chinatown USAs who've since passed on, and like, their names are always going to be in the program books. Even if some of the questions and answers end up being kind of cheesy and being very like pro Chinese identity, almost to a point where it's almost facetious, it's better to have something like that than not.
At the end of the ceremony this year, a Miss Chinatown USA from years back sang Memory as images of decades worth of winners flashed behind her. Just picture it now. A long lineage of Chinese beauty queens being memorialized to a show tune made famous by a bunch of dancing cats and then eventually Barbara Streisand. This was the pageant in a nutshell, a space of contradiction, of conformity, of invention, of change. If nothing else, the pageant serves as a potent reminder to Chinese American women everywhere. There were ones who came before us. They wore the crown, and they passed it on.
I'm so thrilled and honored to be here to share the same stage as them. So, thank you so much for the Miss Chinatown meeting. And I would like to share with you with some of the memories, as you can see on the screen.
That was KALW's Hannah Kingsley Ma. You've been listening to the original KALW News documentary, The Making of a Chinese American Beauty Queen. It was made with the support of the Third Coast Radio Residency and the Ragdale Foundation. Special thanks to Fanny Beck. It was edited by Jen Chien and mixed by Gabe Graben. Thanks for listening. I'm Hannah Baba.